Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. We're here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
And it is.
I
concur. I concur that we're here to talk about it, and I concur that it is a special place.
Yeah.
So, yes to everything.
Yes to everything. And we are in full spring now.
Oh, yeah.
So much going on in the vineyards.
You can see the green everywhere.
I know.
In the vine rows and all the bud break that has been happening over the last month.
A very exciting time.
It is. It's always the start, you know, being married to a farmer, wine grower. He's been giddy. I think it's like he just is excited to start again. It's kind of like, you know, you come out of the winter, the dormancy of the vineyards and just kind of life, it almost feels like. And then spring has sprung.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of which is the most important part of harvest and our vineyards, is having an incredible workforce, which we're really, really so fortunate in Sonoma County to have our vineyard employees. And so many of them, the majority of them, over 90% of them being full-time working in our vineyards. So, you know, I think, you know, hearkening back to, you know, decades ago, you know, grape growing and most of farming was kind of a seasonal labor force. And now they're full-time and living and working in our community. And those that aren't, that supplement our workforce, a number of them are part of the federal guest worker program called the H-2A program, which is specific for agriculture. So I'm actually headed tomorrow to San Diego with Steve and Dutton Ranch to be part of the process where they bring over from Mexico. This year it's going to be a little over 130 men who work for 10 months here in Sonoma County at Dutton Ranch. And it's always just a really incredible process to watch the Mexican government meet the U.S. government, meet agriculture, meet Dutton Ranch in Tijuana. So
right.
If that is not a great recipe for an exciting week ahead.
I think it's a reality show for sure.
It kind of is. I mean, and we actually will in a couple of weeks, once they're back and settled, we're planning to have Steve and his daughter Jordan, Jordan and Chewy. Jordan's boyfriend, but Chewy, who's actually been a long-term employee with Dutton Ranch. We're planning to have Jordan and Steve in just to talk more about the process. They're literally the longest users of this specific program in Sonoma County. So there are some individuals that have been coming to Sonoma County for Dutton Ranch for 14, 15 years in a row and have made enough money to literally build themselves a home, their parents a home, other family homes in Mexico where they're from, and take multiple week vacations. I know one of them said he took his family of 40 and paid for them to go to Puerto Vallarta for an all-inclusive trip last time when he was home during the two-month break. So kind of excited to see what he did this time, because I'm kind of like, dang, I don't do that. And well, I don't have 40 family members, but... And that's totally fine. It'd probably
right.
be a lot. But,
right.
But it's just a really fascinating process and just such a win-win for the employees who get to come from Mexico, and a win-win for our agricultural employers who rely on this guest workforce to really help us do the harvest here. So.
And so they come in April partly because of the pruning needs?
Yeah, so they actually did a lot of the pruning. They were here until the end of January. And a couple of the there's different cycles for the different vineyard employers, folks like Redwood Empire and a Bevel, others that use the H2A program shift. I think they do a little, like you leave at the end of the calendar year and come back a little earlier in the spring and kind of wrap up pruning, where with the Dutton Ranch, they get through essentially most of the pruning by the end of January. They're kind of on a two-month gap where there's, you know, they still have, you know, 20 plus full-time workforce that still lives in our full-time in Sonoma County that can kind of manage the activities that happen, you know, in February, March, and then they come back starting in April and kind of jump into the start of the harvest season and the growing season.
Yeah.
So,
well, that will be a really interesting show to get into the details of that, because I know having written about H2A, it's very complicated.
It is so complicated.
Yeah, but what a wonderful thing to be doing and bringing great workers to Sonoma County to work in the vineyards. All right, when we come back, we will introduce our guest, Kathleen Inman, who many people know, but we'll get into her story, and it's also a very vineyard-specific story, so we will get into that when we get back. Good stuff. We are on air today with good friend, great person, Kathleen Inman, owner, winemaker of Inman Family Wines. Actually, I think your bio is owner, winemaker, and general manager of Inman Family Wines and Olivet Grange Vineyard in Sonoma County, California. But my understanding is you are also a certifiable lunatic.
Indeed.
Right.
Woo!
We are here for that.
But that might require a little explanation.
Yeah. Well, that's why you're here. You have a microphone. Please tell us.
We were talking about sustainability and organic farming, and I'm an organic farmer. I have 10 and a half acres right in the heart of the Russian River in Sonoma County, and I've farmed it organically since I put the vineyard in 2000, but I've never gone for certification, but I am certifiable. So. And I follow the lunar calendar for all of my vineyard practices. So while a lot of people had pruned in January and February, I actually pruned right at the end of February and the beginning of March because the moon was in the right position to encourage root growth. So hence the lunatic. You know, and I think I find when I'm harvesting, I'm also referring to the moon. You tend to get a little sugar bump right after the full moon. So picking right before can mean you have all the same flavors, but maybe not as high as alcohol.
So, that's so interesting.
So I tend to do that. So
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, I not geeking out on organic or biodynamic as any of the certifications, but just the notion of sort of the moon cycle when you think historically about agriculture.
I know.
Like when could you see, what did you use as a guide?
Exactly.
For your decisions.
I know. My story, I grew up in Napa, and my family farmed prunes.
Which is such an exciting crop that we, you know, so many of our farmers had the opportunity to farm before wine grapes.
Well, Napa, just like Sonoma County, was, you know, very different. Yeah. And my family had been there since 1869, some of them. And when I was in 4-H even, it was all prunes, walnuts, cows, and grapes were much smaller portion.
It's crazy. It really was not that long ago.
Yeah,
I know.
Amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah, things can change.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was going to say, when I lived in England, which I did for 16 years, we had cows and sheep that I rotated on one of my paddocks. And I really noticed how wonderful the wildflowers were. And so I started doing things to that I didn't know what biodynamic was, but I was actually doing that. I was using the animals to fertilize. Then when I take them off, and you know, we would eat the animals, some of them, and then the flowers would come, and then we'd mow it, and it would be food for the animals, and full circle.
Yeah, and life begins again.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, some things just kind of fall into place and make sense.
They do. Exactly. Farming is a sort of natural thing, and so I try to do that with my winemaking too.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we start a little bit at the beginning, because you mentioned Napa, and that was certainly probably a very influential place for you growing up in terms that you were 4-H, you were into sort of agriculture at least a little bit.
Well, I was more on the domestic science side. I didn't do the animals.
Okay.
I was more of the cooking, sewing, knitting, embroidery. I did all that stuff. Yeah, I love no it. Idea. But I did yeah. do gardening has always been one of my things that I loved. And I helped my grandmother in the orchard and in the garden. We always had a huge, she always had
so you
a big
grew
vegetable
up on
garden.
A, you grew up on a farm?
Well, no, my parents didn't live there, but my grandmother. And, okay. And it was a 40-acre ranch on Monticello Road yeah. where my grandmother and my great-grandmother and my great-aunt wow. all had houses on the same yeah. property, you know. And so I would spend in the summer weeks with my grandma helping in the garden. But she was not an organic gardener. She was a seven and all these other sort of things that she was puffing the DDT on yeah. the stuff. Oh, and I mean, do we have to do that, Grandma?
Back when.
Back when.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed. But yeah. I think at an early age, I started getting interested in the environment. And, you know, I was, as a school kid, with ecology stickers on my book covers and was really into recycling when that wasn't wow. something everybody did. And, mm-hmm. So I think some of these things that you do as you're a child kind of all come together as you grow up.
Yeah. Stay with you, huh?
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
So then you had an entirely different career between growing up in Napa and becoming a winemaker in Sonoma County. Tell us, and you mentioned England, so there's a lot going on in your past.
There is.
In your past. I won't call it a sordid past. I'll just say your
sordid,
past.
Yes. Yes.
Say your past.
Yeah, so I... it's funny because I grew up in a family that didn't drink alcohol. And so I didn't really know about wine until I went away. I went to study in Santa Barbara at UCSB. And then I did my senior year abroad. Okay. So that was in England.
Ah,
and
okay.
But backing up a bit, my junior year of college, when I came home to Napa, I'd gotten interested in wine. And I thought, well, I'm here. Why don't I see if I can find a job in a winery to mm-hmm. learn a little bit more? I was actually studying medieval art history, so I was not...
Such a natural connection to wine.
So I wasn't planning a career in wine. Yeah. I just wanted to learn more about it.
What were you planning to do? For a career, then. Okay, academic. Okay, fair. Okay.
I had planned to do...
I had a lot of images going on.
Medieval winemaking.
Yeah.
I don't know. It goes back to the lunatic thing, maybe.
Yeah, it does. Oh, I mean, there's little things that all connect. But yeah, so I ended up going to study in England. But I'd met my husband when I was working in the winery in Napa on my first day of my job. I'd been there 15 minutes and...
You're like, this is the best job ever.
Wow. Well, I mean, no, it wasn't really. It was kind of weird, actually, because normally when you would start a new job and you were learning about a tasting, yeah. tasting people, you would get a sample of wine. You would be told about the wines, mm-hmm. whereas I arrived and this place had been a slaughterhouse the year before.
Wow.
It had just been bought.
Wow.
There were still meat hooks and blood drains. Geez. And right. Oh. And so there was a table... folding table set up and the wines were there and this retired policeman was the guy who did tastings on the weekend.
Napa has changed a lot.
It has changed a lot. Yeah, there was definitely no tasting fee.
Yeah.
No elevated experience.
Yeah. Just an experience.
Just an experience. So anyway, I show up, he tastes me on a couple of wines and these first guests show up, an Englishman, Englishwoman, American guy. And they come in. And I'm thinking I'm going to watch him and, you know, shadow him. But no, he says, these are your first guests. And I'm like, oh my goodness.
And he took off.
And I'm 20 years, I think I was 20 years old, actually.
You have arrived.
And so I hear their accent. I say, I'm going to be an exchange student in England next year. And
the plot thickens.
Yes. And so I just started explaining that and told him about the wines. And it turned out that the English guy's sister had gotten married the night before. Oh. And so this was the bride and the groom hours after they were married.
Oh, my God.
And rather hungover, from the big celebrations. And I thought, what a weird guy. He's on his sister's honeymoon in the Napa Valley. This is the weirdest brother ever. And anyway, they bought
good
wine,
for you.
Went away. 2 weeks later... owner calls me into his office and said, well, Kathleen, you really seem to have impressed some Englishman. There's a letter here for you. This was a long time ago. People actually wrote letters.
Wow.
And the letter didn't even have the street number or the zip code. It just said Napa Creek Winery, St. Helena, near Napa, California, USA. Amazingly made it.
Did he know your name? Did he have your name?
No, the inside letter what said, "Dear sir, please forward to the enclosed letter to the blonde assistant studying history of art." Thank goodness that the gray-haired policeman didn't get the letter. You know, yeah. That could have been. Anyway, the letter inside just said, "Dear question mark, it's not easy writing to a girl with no name. You know, forgive me if I was rude or offhand. I was, you know, suffering ill effects of too much champagne the night before.
Being on my sister's honeymoon."
Yes. And so it ended up that we became pen pals, and we wrote to each other for a year, and then I went to study in London, and we dated, and this September it'll be 40 years that we've been married.
So at what point did you tell him your name?
The second letter, but I didn't get to know his till his second letter because his handwriting was so bad.
Oh my gosh, stop.
I could not read what his name was. It was S. Squiggle, and he'd enclosed his business card, but it only said S.R. Inman Esquire, which was no help at all.
Wow.
So I wrote to him.
And that's before we had Google, where you can do research,
exactly,
right? Today we'd be like, do. Oh, there's his picture. That's him. This is his whole background. Oh, that's his sister. Those pictures of the wedding.
Like, or he has a history of writing these letters to blonde assistants.
Exactly. Yeah, there was that wonder about, was this some sort of scheme?
Yeah. Well, you must have been very good at your job.
So anyway, it was what it was. But it turned out that Simon was also interested in wine, and he had worked in Neuilly-Saint-Georges between school and university. And so we had some wine things in common. And obviously, since we've been married so long, we have a lot of other things in common, too. But
did he buy
the glue?
I want to know if he bought any wine that day.
He did not, but my brother-in-law did.
So how funny is you actually sort of... When you got to meet
my brother-in-law is Steve
Tejas. Yeah, you got to meet the whole family at once.
Yeah, exactly.
And really figure it out.
And they were kind of to blame, I guess, you could say.
Right, yes. If they had, yes.
But imagine how different your life, I mean, I don't think it's typical the morning after you get married to go wine tasting, and certainly not typical to bring a family member with you that's not just the person you just married. So all of those back to your lunatic, the stars had to align. We're
exactly. My life is full of so many amazing coincidences.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to fast forward to coming to, really fast forward. I did train as an accountant in the UK and a totally different career.
So medieval art history to accountant.
Accountancy at PW, then an MBA in corporate finance. But gardening all the time. It was my passion. And cooking. I love making things from what I grow.
So you were zigzagging a lot.
I did, but they all kind of come together, to be honest.
Well, you're a business owner and manager first and foremost.
Exactly. I was always really interested in small, more entrepreneurial businesses, you know, and you kind of wonder, can I do that? And so anyway, but talking about stars.
You're here. The answer is a big yes.
Yeah. A big yes. So,
a big
about
yes
stars aligning, though, when we had to have family holiday in 1997 here, that sort of led to what I'm doing now, making wine. We had been in Napa, Sonoma, and then we finished the holiday in Mendocino and opened some wine. You know, put the kids to bed. And we're having a chat, and Simon says, "We should just give it all up and move to California, and you could go back to doing what you were doing when I met you." And I'm like, "That was a summer job, honey. I just got made a partner at my firm. I'm not sure I want to give it up." But basically, we talked about what would have to happen to do that, and pretty much all those things happened within the next week. So.
Wow.
Yeah, one of the things was, you know, someone with more money than sense would need to buy our house in England. The day we got back from the holiday, a realtor, an estate agent, called up that we had met at a dinner party, and randomly someone had contacted him and said, "I've seen this house. It looks like it's called The Grange at Elvington on the map. I'd be interested in buying it." And it turned out he just sold his company on the stock market.
Oh, stop.
So
was there a full moon?
I don't remember.
You might have to go back.
I mean, there might have been some kind of a moon. That's
crazy. Yeah.
No,
I mean,
that is,
I think life has a lot of crazy things.
Yeah.
I call you have to recognize them.
But yeah, you have to be ready. You have to be prepared for it.
Yes.
Right.
And then take advantage of it when it does happen. Because it'd be easy to be like, what? Not ready. But you had just voiced you were ready.
Yep.
Or what it would take.
Exactly.
And there was the gift. Wow.
Okay.
I know, I'm kind of spinning right now.
Yeah,
that's a lot. I think I need some wine.
I think you do too.
Okay.
I think that's
nothing provides clarity like bubbles.
Well, that is for certain. And
I just hope these aren't quite as cold as they were.
Okay, we're gonna let Kathleen open a bottle of bubbles. Tell us what bubbles you're
opening.
Yeah,
so I brought this one is an extra brut. I call it my Lux Cuvée, and it's kind of unusual because this one is a blend of not just Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, but also Pinot Gris, which is one of the allowed grapes in Champagne. And I grow Pinot Gris at my property.
That was a little psst.
I know.
Did you guys catch that?
Done.
I know.
Perfectly done.
Master sommelier Kathleen Inman.
Okay. All right.
Okay, she's now walking around for those that can't see what we're experiencing, so that Virginia and I both get the bubbles in the glass.
If we get quiet all of a sudden, it's because we're drinking.
We'd like to take 30 seconds to just enjoy the bubbles.
Well, yeah, we need to watch the bubbles. We need to drink the bubbles. We need to think about the bubbles. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Like I said, they're not that cold, but cheers.
Okay. Cheers. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk more about that vineyard and coincidences and...
Bubbles. Always bubbles.
Yes. Back on the good stuff with our guest Kathleen Inman, certifiable lunatic farmer, winemaker, really an important person in Sonoma County history of rosé making and sparkling and so many different things. But maybe let's get back to the vineyard, because you mentioned as we were closing for the break that you grow Pinot Gris, which is
unusual. That's right. I mean, I have 10 and a half acres that is mostly Pinot Noir, but I have a little bit of Pinot Gris. So 12,500 Pinot vines and only 1,000 Pinot Gris.
Wow.
So it's quite a small thing. But I was inspired to do Pinot Gris from actually a visit many years ago before I planted my vineyard in Burgundy. And I was at Domaine de l'Arlot, and the... winemaker put some white wine in my glass from a barrel and asked me to guess what it was. And I didn't expect it to be Pinot Gris there, but apparently there are half a dozen producers who make a little bit of Pinot Gris. Compsognard was one as well. And I thought, you know, I think I'm just going to put a little bit of Pinot Gris in. And part of my thinking was, since Pinot Gris is really the mutant cousin of Pinot Noir, it likes to grow in the same places that Pinot Noir does, and it be trained in the same way. So I thought, as a new farmer, having things that were all needed the same type of pruning, the same treatment, what seemed sensible. So I added the Pinot Gris. But at the time, another well-known woman winemaker told me, "Why are you wasting good Pinot Noir land with Pinot Gris?" Because I like it.
Yeah.
And so we kind of called it Kathleen's Folly for a long time, because there really isn't that much in an area like the Russian River Valley where you can get $5,000 to $10,000 a ton for your Pinot Noir easily. Why would you grow Pinot Gris, which usually sells for about $2,000? It economically makes no sense.
There's not much in Sonoma County, period.
Yeah.
Not just in the Russian River Valley.
That's true.
Yeah.
But it is delicious here, because just like we make delicious Pinot Noir in the Russian River Valley, and one of the best places in the world to grow Pinot. I think that, it also makes really delicious Pinot Gris.
So I just want to go back a little bit, because we left on the break that all of these things had to fall in place for you to go follow this passion that Simon, your husband, was saying you should do. And they started to fall in place. So then how'd you choose Sonoma County to land?
Yes, my family really wanted me to be in Napa.
I was going to say, I mean, there had to be a lot of tug.
There was a lot of pressure to be in Napa, but I really wanted to do Pinot Noir. And I think Pinot Noir does best in Sonoma County. And, you know, I'm never going to be disrespectful of Napa, but I think Caneros was much better for cows than it was for controversial.
Yeah. Wow, that's a big upstate.
But I mean, really, when I was a kid, that was all dairy down there. And the soils are quite rich as a result.
A little different.
And very different. And so anyway, I looked at the Sonoma coast and I couldn't really... I just felt that the Russian River has this texture to the wine and this perfume that is so unique. And I love Sonoma Coast and I love Anderson Valley. I didn't want to live so far away from San Francisco and opera and other things I enjoy. So we looked in Sonoma County and fate again. I mean, really, this is a theme in my life. I was looking. We moved here in... May of 1998, and in March of 99, I was doing a charity project driving back and forth on Olivet Road to Sebastopol, and I look at these properties, and I thought, gosh, I'd love to have a place here, either one of the old Vines Infandel vineyards that I thought were so cool, but there were a few empty parcels, and I looked at one, and I said, these look like you have to wait for someone to die to get one. I know that wasn't very nice, but I mean, they look like they were run down.
Yeah.
And oh my goodness, the day I finished the project, the estate agent called and said, there's a probate property at the corner of Olivet and Piner that I think you should look at. And of course, I looked at it and I was sure. And then I dug pits in the ground and it was perfect. And so we put an offer in. It was accepted. But when you come to buy property in probate, it has to go to the court.
Right. Mm.
And you can other people can come and bid you out. And I said to Simon, we need to come with some checks. And he said, no, I think if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And so the court date was exactly 1 year from the day we arrived from England. It was at 8:30 in the morning. We went, and it was knocked down to us. And afterwards, we found out that someone else was willing to spend quite a lot more, but he'd forgotten it was a bank holiday on the Memorial Day on the Monday, and he hadn't got checks, and the banks weren't open at 8:30. So we got it.
Oh, wow. My gosh.
So isn't that fate?
So
what?
Is fate. I'm just going to say my takeaway is when I want something to happen, I'm going to have you put it out into the universe for me.
I think that, yeah.
I mean, that's a whole side business for you.
My motto is make it happen.
Make it happen.
That is my motto.
You are making it. So then, but then you go, I mean, your story started where you're pouring wine in a off the beaten path.
Yes.
Very rustic.
Very
tasting experience in Napa in its earliest days, Napa Valley in its earliest days. So how do you go from that to, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to plant a vineyard. I'm going to make wine, gather those skills, have the confidence to do that. The know-how.
Yeah, I don't really know, but I.
She's like, I wished it to be true. I said it, and
exactly.
That's it.
I manifested.
Sometimes you just have to
do it.
So you know, I knew I could do. I felt I could do the farming, and yes, I relied on soil consultants, and you know, very early on, I met my great friend Jim Pratt, who I refer to him, although his wife doesn't like it, I'm sure. I refer to him as my work husband because I have been with him for over 25 years of working with him, and so I feel very fortunate that I have, you know. But he wasn't farming organically when I met him, and that was something I wanted to do. And he went along on that journey with me, and now he farms so many organic vineyards and is an expert in that.
And one of his lead employees, Jose Cervantes, has been one of our employees of the year. And I know often you're one of the first bud break vineyards in the area. And, and we send Mike DeWald out to do stories on you to bring everything completely full circle today.
Yeah, well, Jose, he started with Jim the year I started. So he is my good friend, and I love him.
Great guy.
Like a brother, you know. He's so wonderful. I was so proud of him when he won that award.
I know.
And then he took my wine to Washington.
He did.
He was so excited to share it with the women in the Senate and the House.
There wasn't a place we went to where Jose wasn't walking around with a bottle of wine that he helped grow the grapes for. And that was part of our Leadership Academy and our trip to D.C.
Cool.
It was so just awesome.
Awesome. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So anyway, at first I thought I'd maybe hire a consultant to make the wine. But I started volunteering at other people's wineries and learning more about the business. And I thought, I think I maybe could do this. And so when it came time for the first fruit was ready in 2002 was the vintage. I'd had a contract with Siduri for the Pinot Noir to take some of it. And so in that first year, 2002, they purchased all of the Pinot, but I took the little Pinot Gris. Yeah. And I made
the little engine that could.
Yes, exactly. I made this little one and I thought, well, if it works, you know, business plan was, you know, the worst case scenario, cellar's full, bank account's empty. Best case is cellar's empty and bank account's full, and I'll make a bit more. And that's what happened. And so I just built the business organically by making a little bit more each year. And then I got to about 1,500 to 1,800 cases, and I kept it like that while my girls were still in school. And once they graduated from Healdsburg High and went off to college, I started making more wine. Mm-hmm. And now I make about 3,800 cases a year, and it's all sold directly through my mailing list and the website.
That's a tiny amount of wine.
It is. It seems like a lot when you have to sell it, though.
Sure. No, I know. I understand this. Absolutely. That's the tension that's in the business.
But I touch every single part of the business, and that I could have made the business a lot bigger. And, you know, part of me says, gosh, you went to business school. You know, you should be leveraging this and you should have been building it up. But I get a lot of satisfaction from being, you know, active in the vineyard, involved in all aspects of the winemaking. And often when people come to taste at the winery, they get to taste with me.
They absolutely do. So we're going to take a quick break and talk about how people can come and taste with you when we return. We are back on The Good Stuff with Kathleen Inman of Inman Family Wines. And tell us a little bit about how people do come and visit you and sort of what they can expect, because you are at Inman very, very hands-on.
We are. And I have a tasting room that is open Thursday through Monday, 11 to 4, and people can make reservations by telephoning or by going on to the Inman Family Wines website and booking times. And then I also do some private tastings on other days as well. And as we're coming into the growing season, we have a sip and stroll, it's called.
Oh,
I do walks in the vineyard, and we focus on the estate wines, the rosé, the Pinot Gris, and the Pinot Noirs that I make on the property. And we go through different blocks and talk about what's happening in the vineyard and taste the wines when we're in those areas, which is kind of fun.
That's so great.
Yeah, I just do that during when there's something to see. You need mud boots to get
yes.
through the vineyard. But so people usually, a lot of my business at Inman has been brought about by word of mouth. And mostly it's people coming and enjoying themselves and coming again with friends or recommending their friends to come. And so it's a very intimate experience when you come.
It's a great experience. I've enjoyed visiting many times. But you also have sort of the eco-ethics side of your business pertains also to the winery itself.
It does. Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. We have, when I built the winery, I started with the vineyard and originally planned to have an all internet-based business back in 1999. That was my goal. But it got to 2007 and I thought maybe I should have bricks and mortar. And so the building is made predominantly of recycled materials. It's all solar powered. All of our wastewater is recycled and reused. And we really try to pay attention to the impact. I call it my eco-ethics, the impact we have on the environment from the packaging that we use to the building we make the wine in.
I love that concept. I'm going to steal that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Eco-ethics.
All right.
No, I think it's like just a great way to think about everything you're doing in the vineyard and winemaking process.
It's a great most satisfying things about having my own business is creating value, using my values that I really wanted and making my business represent those.
Yeah.
So integrity and sensitivity to the to the land and treating the people right that work for me. Those are all really important things.
Well, and maybe in the time that we have left, you can talk just briefly about the Endless Crush that you created. It was one of the first really intentional rosés. You've been a leader in that space, but it's also a testament to that note from that gentleman.
It is. Exactly. When in
a scribble. Guess,
a yes, scribble.
A squiggle. From the scribble.
A squiggle.
Yes.
A squiggle.
Mm-hmm. In 2004, it was our 20th wedding anniversary, and it was going to be my first big harvest because it takes a while for the grapes to really come in. I totally forgot our anniversary. I was so busy in the vineyard, and I was heading to, we pick at night, better for the workers, cool on the grapes. And I was sneaking out of the bedroom, and Simon normally keeps sleeping, but of course he woke up on this time, turned the lights on as I was at the foot of the bed and said, "Happy anniversary!" And he had this lovely diamond that I always wear, oh, a giant card, and was all excited, and I had nothing. So thinking fast on my feet, I said, "I don't have a present, but I'm making a special wine for you today." And I made the first Endless Crush back in 2004 as a present for him. So, and it's the gift that keeps giving. It's become one of my most popular wines. It's a direct-to-press intentional rosé. So it's the whole grape is pressed, and you get a little more complexity. But it does make it a little more expensive rosé than others.
And it's a beautiful color.
It's a beautiful wine.
It is. Well, that's a special thing, too. Yeah. To get that color is a very scientific process. I load the press, turn it twice, go for my two tacos. It has to be two tacos at the same taqueria each time, so it's the right distance. And then I come back, roll the press twice again, and then I press
it.
It's the two taco method.
Oh my gosh. Love it. Okay, we're going to take one last quick break, and when we come back, we'll wrap things up with Kathleen Inman. Back on the good stuff here to wrap things up with our lovely guest, Kathleen Inman of Inman Family Wines. And before we do, you have a new wine that you wanted to introduce
to us.
Yes,
I have one called A Whole Bunch of Love. And I've used this label for a couple of different wines in the past. And this is a red blend that is Grenache from Alexander Valley, from old vines planted in the early 50s,
wow,
and Pinot Noir from the Pratt Vine Hill Vineyard. And it's a basically 50-50 Grenache and Pinot Noir, which is not a usual
combination.
Not common
at all, right?
In fact, I don't know anybody who's ever
just
done
say,
Grenache
it...
and Pinot.
Yeah.
And do you want to taste it?
Yeah. I mean, you're just a groundbreaker.
But
I think we should save it, because this seems like something we should do on our Tuesday night. Not that we say to ever save the good stuff, but since we're, you know, just a couple of days away from drinking
but
the good stuff.
But it's a really fun... You know, I'd only been interviewed a few months before I decided to do this blend by a journalist who was writing about why don't winemakers blend Pinot Noir with other grapes. And I said, because Pinot is perfect as it is. And then,
that's
of
the right
course,
answer.
I had this little issue in the cellar with two wines that were being problem children. And I wondered if they'd play nicely together. And I thought they tasted delicious. And so The Whole Bunch of Love was born.
I love it.
Making lemonade out of lemons, yes.
Exactly.
So what do you think? Tuesday night wine?
I think it's for sure a Tuesday night wine. I think it might be a Wednesday night wine and a Thursday night wine as well. Maybe a Saturday afternoon wine. Yeah, it's always fun to see what you're up to, Kathleen. Thank you for being our guest today.
Well,
remind people they can get to come visit.
Yeah, so InmanFamilyWines.com is the website.
InmanFamilyWines.
Thank
Inman
you.
Family Wines.
Yes. And Wines, W-I-N-E-S, not W-H-I-N-E-S.
Right.
I did have someone once
oh, dear.
Do that.
You're like, no, the other wine, the good wine.
We're at 3900 Piner Road, which is at the corner of Olivet Road. So it's a lovely place to come and taste.
Absolutely. Well, always so much fun catching up with you, hearing all your stories and your love letters to Sonoma County and beyond. Really.
The eco-ethics. All right. Well, thank you again, and thanks for joining us on the Good Stuff Hour today. From Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.